which will be heard by Judge McCullough, Judge Chafin, and Judge Hoff, myself. Mr. Sanzone, are you on the line with us?
Yes, Your Honor, I am. Thank you very much, and thank you for doing it this way this morning.
Well, it's our pleasure, and thank you. It's a mutual accommodation, that's for sure.
A lot better than the last day, I can tell you, that we had this.
Yes, sir. Do you care to reserve any of the time for rebuttal?
Yes, I would. I'd like to reserve 10 minutes then.
Yes.
Probably 10 minutes of my time for rebuttal.
All right. Very well. We're ready when you are, sir.
I think this is really a very straightforward case in most ways, because it deals with items that a person generally would not purchase or own. And the rule that a person can comment on the value of their own property is probably a good rule in most cases, but it's certainly not a good rule in this case. We're dealing with a tree that's out back behind the house. And I think you have to understand the context of all this as well. My client removed a hollow tree, and his testimony was he thought he was removing two dangerous trees, and that was the reason that he removed those trees. He didn't remove them for any commercial reason. Actually, they were trying to just move through that property to get to another job. So we believe that there was no complaint, and there certainly was no complaint in the record about the hollow tree that was removed, and the complaint is about the poplar trees that were back there. We say that really Ms. Jones's statement is speculation, and it's established as speculation by her earlier testimony, because when she first testified, she said she had no way of knowing, essentially, what the value of the trees would be. And it was only after the failed attempt to put the arborist on and have him testify, and that was such a curious testimony to begin with. If it had been true, he would have single-handedly revived the lumber industry in the state of Virginia, because he was calculating the value by the square inch, and it was just really an unusual piece of testimony. But after that failed and Ms. Jones came back, then she had a value which was eerily similar to what had been testified or attempted to be testified to earlier by the arborist and declared to be inadmissible, and she gave no further basis for that testimony. The Commonwealth has made a lot out of the fact that my client testified on cross-examination or examination that poplar lumber could be used as pallet lumber, and that the value of pallet lumber was $235 a thousand, and that there was more than 1,000 board feet present when the cutting had taken place. But that ignores the majority of the testimony of my client on this particular issue. The difference, if you were looking at it from a...
Can I stop you there? This is Judge McCullough.
Yes.
You say, where is it in the record that, I mean, I know the trees were about 70 feet tall, they were in good condition. How do we know how many board feet of lumber come out of them?
Well, I don't think you do exactly. And I think that's
because
a good point.
Well, and the reason I asked that was you just mentioned you get more than 1,000 board feet of lumber. And I don't know much about trees and lumber, so I'm just curious where that comes from. Was that in the testimony?
I don't think it was. I think that they testified to the fact that that my client had said, let's see, let me just go back to you. There was a hypothetical that was asked on 174, page 174 of the transcript, when they were talking about pallet grade lumber being
right,
sold by the thousand for $235 a thousand.
Right.
And I think that sort of gets extrapolated throughout this into an assessment that there was 1,000 feet of lumber, and there wasn't. Because my client then says immediately they would pay 230 $35,000 if they buy it. And he said, if it was any good. And he says, I wouldn't consider it good if you'd seen the center of it. He's talking about the fact that the poplar logs were rotten in the center. And he had been asked earlier.
Yeah, I mean, the court can accept part of someone's testimony and reject part, and in fact, that's very common, where, you know, someone's testimony is a mixture of veracity and lie. But I was just trying to, on the basic math of what accepting the victim, if you want, testimony that the trees were in good condition, the value per square foot, and then just trying to figure out if it's possible to elaborate on this record in light most favorable of the Commonwealth, how much board feet of lumber there might be on these trees.
Yes, and even if it would be sold by the board foot, because if you look at page 172, they asked my client has asked at line 6, were they good for anything other than firewood? And he said, no, they're still laying there. So you have a number of grades of lumber. You have grade lumber. You have common lumber, which is the pilot stuff. You have pulpwood, which is sold by number of cents per hundredweight, depending on what it is. It could be 23 cents per 100 pounds. And then you have firewood, which after it's split and cut is sold a different way. So, you know, nothing in this record, going back to what you said, Judge McCullough, about the 1,000 feet, nothing in this record puts this into an appropriate category for measurement, even if you have an appropriate measure, whether it's grade, common, pulpwood, or firewood. So the other thing that has to be considered is his testimony about whether or not a mill would even buy less than a load of lumber, and he says that they would not. That's on page 171, line 5. The mills don't generally buy less than a load of lumber, and this was less than a load of lumber. And he says that transporting these logs to a mill would cost $350, which far exceeds any value you would receive at the mill. So you've got to go to that to the calculation of, is it on the stump or is it at the mill? And if you go to the at the mill calculation, you have to factor in some other costs. So with that having been said, I think I'll reserve the rest of my argument.
Very well. Thank you. Mr.
Good morning. Good morning. May it please the Court, I'm Benjamin Katz, appearing on behalf of the Commonwealth. And on appeal, the defendant maintains the trial court erred in admitting Jones' testimony concerning the value of the poplar trees removed. And he argues without this testimony, there was no evidence to establish the requisite element of value to support the conviction. As the Court is aware, Code 19.2.324.1 provides the necessary framework for this Court's analysis resolving a challenge to a conviction based upon a claim that a conviction rests upon insufficient evidence in the absence of improperly admitted evidence. And the Court must consider all the evidence admitted at trial. And if the Court concludes improper evidence was admitted and the trial court's error in so doing was not harmless, the defendant's remedy is a new trial. Assuming arguendo the trial court erred in admitting Jones' testimony upon recall, the Commonwealth would submit that any error was harmless. And I base that argument on the trial court's unchallenged reliance upon the defendant's own testimony.
Yeah, and help me with that, because, the defendant's testimony, I mean, we know the trees are about 70 feet tall, and we know from the victim that the trees were in good shape. And then he provides a value per board feet of poplar wood. So I'm trying to elaborate from that or extrapolate how many board feet would we have? Can you point me to where in the record I can make that calculation?
And I understand your Honor's concern, and I've had the same concern, and there's no testimony in the record that would link the board footage of these poplars.
Right, so like the arborist says, they were 54 inches off the ground. And
that's right, we know the height of the
bump. But just looking at all of this, I was at a loss. I mean, presumably, in light most favorable to the Commonwealth. There's some lumber in there that's a quality poplar lumber, but beyond that, I'm to fix a precise value that exceeds $200, I'm somewhat at a loss.
Well, and Your Honor, I would say it in this way. We know the height of the trees, we know the height of the stumps, we know the diameter of the stumps. We do not know the board footage, but what we do know is this. The testimony in this regard comes on 97 and 101 of the joint appendix from the defendant, but significantly for our purposes today, we have the trial court's finding on 120, and the trial court is making a finding about the value based on the board footage, assuming that that's in evidence. And I can't tell you today that there is testimony about the board footage, but what I would submit is there's been no challenge on appeal to that finding.
Right. Okay. So, in other words, the trial court considered the victim's testimony. That's a signed error, although, I mean, as though you have an argument there, but at any rate, and then there's additional evidence as an alternate ground. That's not challenged on appeal, and so regardless of the flaw, perhaps, in the victim's testimony, there's this alternate basis that's unchallenged, and so that's we have to affirm on that ground.
That is precisely the position of the Commonwealth, and you know I would agree that I can't point you to testimony that would support the trial court's finding, but I would submit that it's not before this court.
I mean, the courts can make error all the time, but if it's not challenged, then that's the end of the line.
That would be the position of the Commonwealth, Your Honor, exactly.
All right.
With respect to Jones's testimony, though, I would submit, leaving aside this finding on the alternate basis, I would submit the admission of Jones's testimony was not an error. The defendant proceeds from a flawed premise in this regard. First, that the Commonwealth or the trial court erred in allowing her to impeach herself, and I would submit that the testimony upon recall was not inconsistent with the testimony in her initial presentation. In fact, they covered two distinct areas of testimony. So the one could not contradict the other. They were entirely different. The first concerned the total value of the trees. The second concerned whether a floor of that value was $200. And to the extent the defendant maintains that the Snyder case stands for a proposition that an owner can't have an opinion about the value of property, I would submit that's simply an incorrect reading of Snyder. And moreover, the argument
Counsel, I don't know if that we reached the question in this case, but we have all those cases that talk about we defer to an owner's assessment of value. And typically those are consumer-type items, you know, TVs or jewelry, I mean, that kind of stuff, things that people regularly buy and sell. Is there an outer limit to that? I mean, if this is a silly hypothetical, but if someone steals, you know, uranium ore in someone's backyard, I mean, would the owner be able to value what that is? And here we have trees, which are not commonly bought and sold by the average person. So does that do the limitations on that principle apply to this kind of testimony?
Well, Your Honor, I think Haynes is useful in that regard. That's 197 Virginia 746. And you know, clearly an owner can have an opinion as to value, but under the circumstances you're describing, where it might be something difficult to value, or perhaps the owner has no background upon which to place an estimate of the value, I would submit that goes to the weight of the opinion. It's not an issue as to the admissibility of the opinion. And that's reflected in this very trial, where you have the trial court finding at the conclusion of the evidence, look, I'm not going to say that this tree is worth $10,000. The trial court appropriately made a determination as to the weight of Jones's opinion. But the trial court did say, you know, I find ample evidence it's more than $200. So I would agree with you.
Let me ask you, wasn't this just an alternate approach? This is Judge Huff. Wasn't this just an alternate approach to establish a value on the tree? The first approach didn't work, and so if fair market value of property is the price agreed upon between a willing buyer and a willing seller, here the questioning takes us through a different course. Well, to the seller, potential seller, the homeowner, well, would you take $1,000? Would you take $1,500? Isn't that simply an alternate approach to put some parameters on the fair market value, if fair market value is what the seller would be willing to part with the trees for.
Certainly. And I think under Haynes and its jurisprudence, it was entirely appropriate. An owner is not required to know the market value and doesn't have to be an expert on the values. And so simply by saying, look, I would take no less than X amount, I mean, that was a perfectly permissible question to ask the owner of the property. And it comes well within the ability of an owner to opine upon value. She was unable to give the total value in a vacuum, but she could certainly say, look, I wouldn't take less than this. And so I think that was appropriate under the circumstances, and it can't be determined error. So I would agree with Judge McCullough that there may be circumstances at which we would get so far from any knowledge the owner would possess as to make the opinion to have very little weight, but I would submit we are not in that circumstance in this particular case. With that, I'd be happy to answer any additional questions the panel may have.
Hearing none, we thank you very much, Mr. Katz.
Thank you.
Fan Zone, by my calculations, you have 8 minutes remaining.
All right. Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, first going to your question about what a person would take for property and that as an establishment of value. We think that can never be an establishment of value when they have the burden of proof. All the statutes are strictly construed against the Commonwealth, and we're establishing value, not a person's perception of value and speculation on value, because then in any case, all you have to have is a Commonwealth witness who says, I wouldn't take less than $250 for this pencil. Does that establish the value at $250? I don't think so. And back to what was said earlier about the fact that we didn't object to any alternate method other than Ms. Jones from the evidence, we didn't need to because there was no evidence. And if you look at my assignment of error, we say without her testimony was without proper foundation, and was an impermissible estimate, and without which no value exceeding $200 could be established. What we're saying is there was no other evidence in the record that established a value of more than $200. So I don't think we have to object to someone's calculation that is completely misplaced and not based upon anything in the record. Going back to what Judge McCullough said on this, I think that's exactly correct. There is nothing in the record that tells us how many board feet we have. There could be, this was a tree that came down after a terrible storm. They called it the land hurricane. I mean, the whole premise of my client being out there was that there was so much damage that, you know, he and all kinds of other people were doing work on trees. And as I said, there was a hollow tree that was taken down on this property without complaint. If those trees were splintered, you don't have any testimony that they were in any sort of shape. The only testimony about condition.
Well, I thought the property owner said the trees were very healthy and they were in really good shape.
Well, I'll take that back. The property owner said they were healthy and in good shape. I agree with you on that, and that's a proper basis for a finding. But I guess to comment on the particularity of the wood for purposes of sale, let's put it that way.
Okay.
There's a comment that they were hollow in the center. That doesn't mean that she wouldn't have thought that meant they were in good shape. I mean, maybe she wouldn't have realized that that was a problem with the wood. Maybe she would have thought that that meant that they were still in good shape. The actual comment on the lumber is that business from the transcript for my clients is that they weren't good for anything other than firewood. And so that means, I think the only fair inference there is that they had no saleable value as commercial lumber. And there was no witness who came in and said, yes, this could be commercially sold and what the value of it at the mill would be.
Factually, am I correct? He testified this lumber was still sitting around?
Yes, he said that he had just hauled it off. All he did was haul it off.
Okay, all right. So in other words, it wasn't available for inspection at this point.
It would have been, yes. It was still laying. It was still laying at his yard, and he also testified that he would have charged $2,000 to clean up, which basically means take the trees down and haul them away. And he just didn't do it because, you know, he just didn't do it. Sometimes people don't charge for things they could charge for.
Was the
but I think that goes into the value as well.
There was a 2000, this is Judge Hoff again, there was a $2,000 restitution figure. Was that based on anything other than the value of the two trees?
Not that I could determine.
Right.
Because there was no other damage demonstrated to the property, and then there was no allocation for the, you know, for the work that he did satisfactorily on the property belonging to the landowner. I think when you start speculating, I guess my comment on the whole thing would be once speculation begins, there just never seems to be an end to it.
Is the commercial lumber value the only way that these trees would have value? I mean, wouldn't they be of some value to a homeowner for shade or enjoyment? Aren't there some other ways to assign value to living trees?
I don't think there is for the purposes of larceny under that statute because it gets back to strict instruction against the Commonwealth. But I will say this, and I said this in arguing the case to Judge Updike, I think some value is appropriate. I mean, even if they were firewood, maybe it's $20. And, you know, if he thought that they'd been taken, you know, some value is there. We've had that before. I think the Walls case talked about the fact that even if you don't have a value of $200, you probably have some value. And I think that's probably true in most cases, including this one. But, you know, that has to be determined, but I don't think that's unfair. I just think that even the $200 limit in this case requires some specific testimony about we have this number of board feet, and it's marketable, and this is what would be paid. You can't just let the homeowner go wild and speculate on my shoes are worth $130,000 because they look like something that I saw in World War II.
Maybe they're Bruno Mali.
Counsel, may I ask you, this is Judge Chafin, he also had to take down a hemlock tree. Was there any, can you remind me or refresh my memory as to what was discussed about the hemlock tree? I know that those are somewhat rare anymore because of there's some type of disease that has affected them. Was there any testimony in reference to the hemlock?
I believe the testimony was that it was hollow and was a danger, and that I believe that's the one that they're talking about because there was, other than the poplars, there was another tree that was taken down, apparently completely without complaint by Ms. Jones, and he never charged her a penny for that. He, as I said, you know, he was just out there. These were two things that could be done incidentally as he went in a roadway to go to a larger job he had.
So your argument essentially is that he's a good Samaritan. Is that fair?
Well, you know, I don't know. I told him he needs to come down here and let me charge him $100 for a simple contract, and you know what you're dealing with every time. But you know, everybody's view of a good Samaritan, you know, you get in there and you try to do it, and somebody doesn't like what you did, and all this stuff erupts. But having said all that, I still think that they are charged with, under our law, having some exact determination of value, and it can't be speculative.
All right, looks like you're at the end of your time as well. Anything further from you, sir?
No, Your Honor. Thank you all so much, as I said, for hearing us today and hearing us in this way.
Our pleasure. And that concludes the docket. We'll end this phone call, and then the judges will go into